CliffCentral.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Gareth Cliff Show with Gareth Cliff.
Ah, good morning, Ben and Mabs and Sia and Amanda, and most especially to you from a balmy bun at 18 degrees Celsius at just at 6 o'clock in the morning. Isn't it marvellous?
It really is, Gareth. It's not so balmy where we are, but how go things in Deutschland?
Pretty good. What's going on there? Is it cold? Very, very cold?
The usual. It's cold, freezing with a touch of stupidity from government officials and administrators.
Ben, have you been digging deep over the last few days to find the best possible outcome?
Gareth, I dig so deep that I've got nothing else to go for. I'm kind of rock bottom right now.
Hey, Mabs.
Hello.
What's happening?
Yeah, it's all good in the hood.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Look at you, ref star, aficionado.
Well, I tell you who is an aficionado, well, just an all-time rock star, really, is Amanda. She gets here the earliest, and she seems to be holding things down, although she's now shaking her head. What's wrong, Amanda?
Sia gets here the earliest.
Yeah, but Sia's like in charge nowadays, so he doesn't count.
Yeah.
Then I get you the second earliest.
There we go.
Yeah, Sia used to be able to come in whenever he wants. Now he has to keep the whole show going and make sure everybody else is there and, you know, and all that responsibility for a 22-year-old.
It's insane. This is a lot of pressure in the morning, party people.
I know. So, Sia, you would like Germany because there is, I mean, especially Berlin. I was thinking about this yesterday when we were talking and I didn't get to, I haven't even told you half the stories because We have like half an hour and then we've got news and sport and everything else. But you would love Berlin. It's turning into one of the most trendy, exciting cities in Europe. In fact, I reckon that it's probably on its way to being the most happening kind of in place to be in Europe, if it isn't there already. Just the diversity, the amount of cosmopolitan stuff going on. They say that 2 out of 3 Berliners were not born in Berlin.
So it's almost has that New York City factor where everyone living in New York isn't from New York. It's this diverse cosmopolitan situation.
Absolutely. Very cosmopolitan, very sophisticated. You hear different languages everywhere that you go. And it's very arty and it's kind of edgy. You know, you walk past what looks like, and there's graffiti, by the way, everywhere. Not necessarily great graffiti. Like I've seen pretty cool-looking graffiti in Johannesburg, but in Berlin there's just graffiti. Even on a perfectly beautiful street full of museums, you'll see some guys like graffitied up the bus stop or whatever. So it's grimy. It's like it's a bit of a dirty city in some ways. I don't mean papers lying around and stuff. That doesn't happen. But there's graffiti. You know, the parks. The funny thing is, like the parks in Berlin, even though there's so many of them, they're not. The lawn isn't mowed and it kind of grows a bit wild. So there's this interesting, I can't help thinking it's because Germans are descended from the Goths, who were these like very violent, very natural, and you know, all the nudists in Germany and all that kind of thing. If you walk through the parks in summer.
Nudists people in the parks?
What's that?
Nudists in the actual overgrown parks?
No, but there are a lot of nudists in Berlin, in Germany, not in Berlin necessarily. And Berlin is interesting because in the parks in the summer, I mean, I walked past a girl who was wearing her bra and panties lying on the ground.
That's normal. Just
My bunny would like the place because you walk past a door and you don't know whether it's the entrance to like some dungeon nightclub where people are walking around on all fours in leather with their genitals out, or whether it's an art studio, a gallery. You have no idea until you go in.
So I'd spend all my time just walking in and out of suspicious-looking doors.
You would love it.
Hey, you win some, you lose some, you get abducted in some. It's all part of the experience.
Yeah. It balances out.
It's like a lucky dip. You never know.
So how did the sort of work component go yesterday?
Oh, yesterday was fascinating. They opened up the conference, the Global Media Forum, with a dedication to, and I don't think I mentioned this yesterday, but Helmut Kohl died. Did we talk about this at all?
No, we haven't.
Well, this would be like when Madiba died for us, because Helmut Kohl, though he wasn't as beloved or international a figure as Madiba by any means, but to Germans he was important because he was the chancellor who made the transition from West Germany and East Germany to a united Germany.
Right.
And he died on, I think it was Friday or Saturday. I think it could have been Saturday. And flags have been flying at half-mast, and they're burying him this week. But having been to Berlin and to Bonn, which are the two cities where Helmut Kohl had the most influence, I've been around places that were very important in his story. You know, the conference, the global media conference that we were at yesterday for the first day and that we're going to today, is being held in what is the old Bundestag. That's the old Parliament of West Germany. So we're actually sitting in a room where they used to make the laws. In fact, it's a room where Madiba spoke in 1996, and Helmut Kohl was then Chancellor of Germany.
Hmm.
Yeah, so there are pictures. If you look up the Bundestag and Mandela, you'll see pictures of him standing in the very room that I was in yesterday, addressing the German Parliament. And Helmut Kohl was at that point Chancellor. So there's a lot of history here, and Bonn and Berlin, obviously the capitals politically of Germany. Very, very interesting place. So anyway, it opened up yesterday with a tribute from one of the guys. In fact, his name is, I can't remember now. He's the head of Deutsche Welle. Deutsche Welle is like it's like a really good functional SABC, like a state broadcaster.
Really good functional.
Yeah. So Deutsche Welle hosts this conference. And they're the state broadcaster, and they try to support other state broadcasters and freedom of expression all over the world. That's why they host this conference. And part of the whole thing was this opening where the head of Deutsche Welle, the managing director of Deutsche Welle, welcomed everybody and kind of paid tribute to Helmut Kohl, who he's covered as a journalist for many years. And then they went on to a discussion of how media is changing and how digital media is the future, and how much new stuff has come in that has changed the way we feel about media, fake news, Donald Trump, all of that stuff. So there's a lot to talk about. And that was just the opening. There were two or three really interesting presentations. I'll give you a brief summary, because I know that there are probably more interesting things to talk about at the moment, news-wise. One of them was Yusuf Omar. Do you remember him from ENCA?
Mm.
Yeah, Yusuf Omar was here. He's now working for CNN.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's done very, very well. And he did an excellent presentation on stories, you know, Snapchat stories, Instagram stories, Facebook stories, which are, to most people, they're just irritating. But to younger people, this is the way that they're going to be able to spread news, tell stories, connect with each other better than any other way. And some people don't like them, but I do think that there's huge merit in them. If you've ever, Sia, do you do stories? I haven't seen any from you.
Yeah, so I'm not really into Snapchat, but I've just started the Instagram stories. And I get it, though. I get that it's a new way of storytelling. I get that it's instantaneous. But I wonder if I'd be interested to hear what he said, particularly with its longevity, because I just feel like it's a little fad.
Well, everybody says that, you know, it comes and goes, because you only have it there for 24 hours and then it disappears.
Yeah.
It's not like Instagram, which stays there if you take a photograph, or Facebook if a post remains, or Twitter where the tweets stay. So Snapchat and Instagram, the stories obviously go off the radar as soon as you've seen them.
Yeah.
He said, so what? He said, that's how all stories are. Even a big international story, the next day on the TV, you would think you were in a different world because that story's not there anymore. And he makes a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. It's like, you know, anything nowadays.
Nothing lasts.
Exactly. Everything's in the moment.
Yeah. So that was fascinating. He also kind of showed how he put stories together. And I was pleased that he mentioned that he started off in South Africa. And he actually was one of Ari's Kelman 20 2 years ago when he launched that. And Yusuf has really done very, very well. So he works in London now for CNN as one of their senior social media storytellers. And he produced a very, very good presentation, which I think everybody was very interested to see. Then we had a guy who was talking about privacy and the end of privacy on the internet. Now, we often discuss this on the show, so it's nothing new to us. But I thought this was interesting because this guy said, you know, we're all uptight about all this information of ours that's online. We're worried about how much people know about us. We're scared of a world where we no longer have any privacy. He said, so what? He said, ultimately, if we're all giving it up, it doesn't matter. And he said, just by the way, governments can't protect their information. So what chance do individuals have? You know, if the U.S. government can't get Edward Snowden to stop hacking into them, if Wikipedia and Julian Assange can't get every bit of information they want by WikiLeaks, then what chance do Ben Karpinski, Sia Sangweni, Mabali Moloi, and Gareth Cliff have? And it's a good point. So why stress about it? Just get on with it. And if people know everything about you, and if they know stuff about you don't want them to know, maybe you should ask yourself why you don't want them to know that. What are you trying to hide? Or do you have things that are worth hiding? And if you do, how authentically are you living?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want to, like, reveal your bank account details and that kind of stuff, but you're right.
No, sure.
What do we really have that's so worth hiding? And why are we so precious about this?
Yeah, I mean, apparently somebody like Mark Zuckerberg tapes this camera portion of his laptop because he says that, you know, he's genuinely concerned about people hacking him. And then
motherfucker, he's got a cheek when he's got all this info about us.
No, but my issue is, I can understand Mark Zuckerberg do it, but who the hell is trying to hack into your laptop? You're a nobody. So now everybody covers this portion of their laptop. Why? They're not interested in you. You're not valuable like Mark Zuckerberg.
You are very mysterious, and you don't even have an Instagram.
No, I'm just saying, like, exactly to this point. Not everybody is interested in you. Only certain people attract that kind of interest where somebody would want to hack into their stuff.
Well, the future of cyber crimes, though, are just going after every single Tom, Dick, and Jabulani and getting after anything you can. Do you remember,
that's
talk?
That's also a good point.
Yeah, the talk we went to a couple of months ago back at Investec, and they were talking about how, you know, they're even hacking Joe Soap's bank account even.
Yeah, the hackers are 10 steps ahead, so it goes back to this point of there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, God.
Right.
So deal with it.
Right, absolutely.
It is a lot.
I think you just got to be pragmatic about this. And as the guy was saying, by the way, he was a Polish psychometric analyst, so he takes in all this info. He was saying that computers are able to predict someone's gender, someone's sexual orientation, someone's political leanings from a photograph. Computers can now analyze your face, and they will be able to say whether you voted for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton.
No.
Computers will be able to look at your face and figure out whether you're straight, gay, or anything else. How's that?
That's, it's impressive, I guess, is a word.
Like,
well, it is, but what would that mean for poor Caitlyn Jenner? I mean, what if the computer is the one issuing the ID cards, which it probably will do one day, and Caitlyn goes to the equivalent of Home Affairs, and Caitlin goes, "Hi, I'm here to get my ID card. I'm a woman." And it goes, "I'm sorry, you are a man. We have analyzed your face. Here is your ID card," and it says man. And poor old Caitlin has no appeal.
See, like, it's interesting where we'll draw the line, if we even ever do. You know, so now computers will know everything about us, and it will just be even more part of the norm, I guess.
Well, it's like I said the other day, if everybody has nudes online, then suddenly nudes online are not a thing. If everybody's buying and selling information is online, then who really cares if that stuff is being used by Amazon or eBay or Google or Facebook or anyone else, right?
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. Like, you know, you flood the market with something, it loses its value.
Correct.
It's just getting to that point, like, using nudes as you bring it up. Like, it's just trying to get people to that point, though. It's going to be so difficult.
Well, there were lots of really interesting. There were a bunch of Zimbabwean guys who did an awesome presentation. I don't know if you've heard of Zambezi News. They're actually apparently going to be on Mnet soon. That's what they said. They've just signed a deal with Mnet. They do this really cool parody stuff on Robert Mugabe and being in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwean media. It's very, very clever. Have you seen them?
No, but are they affiliated to My Zimbabwe?
Yeah, we've only heard of My Zimbabwe. That's
because, you know, Gareth, we already know the big networks.
Yeah.
My Zimbabwe is fantastic, and I don't mean to take away from them, but no, it's three guys. I don't know any of their names. There's two black dudes and one white guy, and they just do these really funny parodies. They're clever, they're cutting, they're sarcastic. It's great satire, and they put on a whole show. Where they basically explained how awesome it is that they have a 93-year-old man in charge of their country, and why are all these other countries changing leaders all the time? They don't understand it.
They're also very ballsy, hey? I mean,
yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that would upset the octogenarian.
Yeah, do these guys live in Zim, or are they outside somewhere?
They do. They live in Zim, and somehow they manage to produce this stuff, and they say that often they'll get, like, ministers who they'll see, and the minister will go, I think you are very funny, but sometime you must be careful who will come and we will get you when you are sleepy, which is very, very horrible. You imagine? Now, that's where freedom of expression gets you into trouble.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I suppose, look, it's going to get interesting today. We've got more panel discussions, plenary sessions, people talking about their experiences in various parts of the world. And there really is such a mixed up crowd here. A lot of the crowd either speak English or German, but there are also people from India, Bangladesh, China, the Middle East. It's a very, very mixed crowd, which is exciting because you never know who you're going
to
meet.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So whenever we talk to Hi Rob, he always says that Amsterdam is mostly English. You don't have to worry about the local language. What's it like there in Berlin? You say it's so cosmopolitan. Is English kind of like the most widely spoken language, or is it still very much German?
Well, Germans speak German to each other, but all of them have English as a second language. So there are very, very few Germans that you can't talk to. You can speak. I manage to, you know, I can order at a restaurant in German. I can say how much something is. I can have basic conversations like, you know, can you help me with this?
Or like, what time is your sex dungeon open?
Yeah, exactly. You need to know that stuff.
Basics.
But my ability to speak any kind of fluent German would be minimal at best. So I think I can get away with just English, and a lot of people do, and you'll be fine. Most of Europe, except France, they make an effort with you if you're a foreigner and you can't speak their language. Only the French are difficult. Only the French, very full of themselves. So what's happening back home? What's going on? I'm sort of out of the loop news-wise.
Gareth, I suppose the big story is just the public protector, if we can still call her that. She's got a very definite stance on a Reserve Bank issue right now, which I think we'll be hearing more about in the finance and in Mavs' news. That's kind of the big story, Sia. Anything else really get on your radar yesterday?
No, well, apart from the entire world still speculating whether Beyonce's twins are born or not, that is what is absolutely important in my world.
How can you speculate on that? She's either pregnant or she's
She definitely is pregnant. Yeah, we know that for sure by now, like, Ben. But we don't know whether they're born. We don't even know if she is in hospital. But
what?
Yeah.
Why are they keeping this so secret?
Exactly. Because these aren't like the new saviors of the earth being born.
That's debatable, depending on which circle you're hanging her out in. Well, reports say that Beyonce went into hospital on Friday. Jay-Z actually had some sort of songwriter's induction in a Hall of Fame, which he didn't attend. And that's why people are speculating even more, because they also spotted cars leaving the Carter's home, going into a LA hospital. And so Matthew Knowles, who's Beyonce's father, tweeted on Monday saying, "Happy birthday to the twins." So that's the only way we're going about with some sort of confirmation.
There's always some family member who lets it slip.
You see what I mean? Just like lazy. A dodgy family member who we need to kick out. He's like, exactly. No, why
a dodgy family member that's not on the PR team.
No.
You've got to have a united front on these things.
You know, by the way, Matthew Knowles is the father who, you know, cheated on Beyonce's mother with a little prosy named One Tooth. So,
One Tooth. One,
you are lying.
Wow.
You are a liar. I mean, like, right,
Hugh Grant couldn't even go that low.
I know.
One Tooth.
What?
Let the visuals take you away. Her name was One Tooth. So already the.
I hope the tooth was at least gold after he was there.
Well, the family already doesn't like him.
One Tooth.
Yeah. Let's see. Amazing. People are now, you know, speculating with, you know, the twins' names and what will happen. But hey, listen, this is Beyonce. She'll probably drop a surprise album to announce the twins being born. We'll see.
Yeah, that'd be kind of good. Oh. She can actually make a music video coming out of hospital.
Or like the actual birth.
Okay, see, that's too far again. Okay, talking about how you keep going too far. Gareth, another thing we're doing this week is we're playing songs that you may have been conceived to. We've had some nice submissions. So basically, we're trying to narrow it down. So yesterday we played our first few submissions. Then my mother messaged me, which is kind of weird. And I've got Mubs' suggestions to what she was conceived to. I've got Sia's suggestions. Amanda, awesome. We're trying to work out your date of birth was?
The 1st of February, 1997. So I think I was conceived in May, 1996.
Okay, so we need to get to you. We'll probably get to you on Friday.
Wow,
so
that's going to be a bad song. That's going to be a really bad song. I can tell you. It's like Ace of Base or something.
Yeah, so Matt, if you can give some thought, we'll get to you on Friday. We're going to do Mubs and Seal the next couple of days. Gareth, any suggestions what you could have been conceived to?
Oh, this is going to be... like New Year, 1976. Ooh. Jesus.
Summer.
No. That's going to be bad. It might be the Bee Gees.
Oh, no. Wait, so Jan 1976. Let me make a note of that. We'll see.
I think December, maybe. Because, in fact, probably November. It's 9 months, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's not really 9 months, apparently.
Oh.
Apparently not.
Like 40
well,
weeks.
Well, let me just
42
see.
42 weeks, so it says, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. That whole 9 months thing is kind of like a rounding it off figure, as I've been told.
Yeah, all right. I'm looking at some of these songs. They're
me
bad.
Me too. Some Barry Manilow.
Oh, there we go.
Diana Ross.
Biggest hit singles were from ABBA, Queen, Chicago, and Elton John and Kiki D. Don't go breaking my heart.
That's a great lineup, Gareth.
No. I wouldn't if I had tried. Or something like that.
That's the one. That's exactly the one, Mavs.
Oh, honey, when I get restless. Oh, hubba, hubba.
And ABBA's Fernando. Chicago's If You Leave Me Now.
Yeah, see, there's candles in Chicago.
Play the biggest part of me. Yes. And then Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. That's a huge song.
Ooh,
that's considered one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This is a conception song, though.
Casey and the Sunshine Band, Shake Your Booty. Hey, maybe that was...
This is so bizarre.
Ben, did you actually like have a conversation with your mother yesterday? Did you take it further, or were you freaked out?
I don't think I was completely freaked out, but it wasn't a go-to thing I did. I didn't call her and chat about it. She says she's going to give us some thoughts. So I think I'll just leave it up to her to come up with some suggestions.
Sure.
I will have a few guesses, but today we'll be playing the songs that my buddy thinks that she was conceived to. And it's quite a list. It really is quite a list. I also got a great tweet yesterday from Petter, I think it is. I better mispronounce that. But Alana Miles, Black Velvet.
Oh, that's a good song.
That's a conception song of note, huh?
Oh, that's a good one. I like that a lot.
Because the thing is, you listen to these songs and go, yeah, my parents still love that song. It's so weird. They keep playing it.
Yeah, meanwhile, that's your one. All right.
Okay, so what does today hold, the next day?
Today we are doing our panel, so I'm going to be speaking and joining four other really, really interesting people on our panel. I'll tell you who they are and what they're all doing, because we're talking about social media in polarized societies and what that means. So let me give you an idea of who else is on my panel. And there are a couple of other sessions planned as well, which I'll be going along to. And then this evening, We've got a dinner cruise on the Rhine River.
Oh, well, nice.
Which is interesting. So you hop on one of these big boats and then you go up and down the Rhine. So on my panel, the only guy I haven't met yet is a guy called Pramesh Chandran. He's from Malaysia. There's Murat, who's Turkish. He's a deputy editor of P24 in Turkey, and he'll be talking about that society where obviously Erdogan is busy making some very onerous rules about what you are and aren't allowed to report on. There's a really interesting woman called Anna Dudek, who's from Poland. She's a journalist in Warsaw. She's written books. She has some very, very strong opinions on things. I actually met her yesterday properly for the first time. And then me and a guy called Ronald Menardus, who is our moderator on our panel, who is one of the people from Deutsche Welle, who's hosting the conference.
So you're making friends, basically, is what you're saying.
Very, very cool people. I'm meeting some smart people and some people with some very interesting challenges. Yesterday, I heard a guy who's been arrested in Cuba talking, and he was talking about how he was locked up for basically 2 years.
What?
For drawing a cartoon of the pig from Animal Farm and calling them Raul and Fidel in Cuba. He got locked up for 2 years just for insulting the president.
You know,
incredible.
Presidents have pathetic little egos, it would seem.
Very insecure people.
So very insecure people, the whole lot of them.
Tiny, tiny little egos. Tiny hands and tiny, tiny egos. Very, very small egos. Tremendously small egos.
Yeah.
Douchebags. I see our president, one of the reasons people are saying that the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, is going after ABSA suddenly is because they revealed, you remember Mubs in the news last week, that the president's wife, her bank accounts were frozen because their suspicious money is coming in and out. Mm-hmm. And you think it's completely unrelated that this week the public protector has been told, go after ABSA?
Yeah, funny yeah. That, huh?
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
I just don't think there's any coincidence with what's happening with these governmental types.
No, and I wouldn't put it past. Everybody goes, oh, give this public protector a chance. I think we've given her a chance. She's shown her true colors. She's about as much of a public protector. She's more the president's protector. I know wild animals who are better public protectors at this point than she is.
Well, the initials stay the same. She's still a PP.
Yeah, there we go. All right, let's get into some news.
Damn right. News today brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. If you missed the 2-for-1 deal yesterday, don't worry. Next Monday, you'll have it again. Otherwise, just go on down to your local Colcacchio Pizzeria and get the best, freshest ingredients, great pizzas, great salads. They are the reason you crave pizza.
Oh, there's Mabali's music.
Here it is.
Yes, indeed. We'll begin with a little bit of fraud on corruption because our spy boss, SA Spy Boss, has been implicated in massive tender fraud at PRASA. PRASA, of course, being the passenger rail agency of South Africa, which has been paralyzed for some time now by systemic corruption. A security company which is partly owned by State Security Agency Director General Arthur Fraser is now accused of flouting tender processes and also submitting false tax certificates in order to score a 90 million rand contract from PRASA. This is according to a National Treasury investigation. The resurgent risk managers, co-founded by Fraser and the former National Intelligence Agency boss, may also have bribed their way into the contract, according to investigators. So, a little bit of fraud, a little bit of corruption for you to start your day. And
thanks,
then,
Mubs. That's like the cereal at breakfast. You have to have a bit of corruption in the morning. Otherwise, it just doesn't feel like you're in South Africa.
I mean, at this stage, it almost comes highly recommended, kind of like that whole an apple a day saying.
Yeah.
Like you have to have a bit of fraud of corruption to start your morning off in this country. So
absolutely.
You're welcome.
It's your roughage.
Exactly. It's what keeps you regular. And then over at the post-mortem strike debacle, remember we've been talking about how this strike that's now in its 10th day, going into 11 days, where forensic specialists have essentially said that they're not going to be conducting any more postmortems. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, the Gauteng Health Department had to strongly deny allegations that they're now using untrained forensic staff members to conduct these postmortems because, you know, there's now a backlog of over 200 bodies in a queue. Mm. That are all waiting to undergo forensic examinations at the Gauteng mortuaries. So it was revealed that what they're doing at the mortuaries is they're now employing, for example, cleaners to come and conduct postmortems. And so the health department yesterday had to come out and say, no, that is not exactly what's happening. According to the provincial spokesperson for the department, he says that the striking employees did not perform the examinations, but are merely assisting actual trained pathologists and the doctors in preparing the postmortems. So, sure. Yeah. And remember, this strike is over wage issues. And, you know, the spokesperson for the department also added that the negotiation with the unions will resume or will, you know, will continue so that they can try and nip this in the bud as quickly as possible. But yeah, the strike has been ongoing for several days now. And, you know, a lot of families are now also complaining about how they're having to bear the costs of the strike because they're just having to fork out more and more money to funeral parlors, for example. Like, it's costing them more money to try and bury their loved ones because of the strike. So it's just a big mess all around.
That's so horrible. I feel so bad for these people. I really do. You know, because someone is arguing about what's their job, and their job happens to be something that really affects a lot of people in a very emotional way, they do what they want, you know. I feel terrible for these families. Imagine not being able to bury your loved ones.
Oh man,
it's hard.
Now, you remember the story of Thembisile Yende and the Eskom employee whose body was found. I think it was in a black refuse bag, right?
Underneath
her desk at her place of employment. Well, an arrest has finally been made, and the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa yesterday welcoming the arrest of 43-year-old David Ngwenya in connection with the murder of Thembisile Yende. The union says it commends the efforts of the police and hopes that this is the first step in helping the family to achieve a sense of justice for her murder. Ngwenya was arrested in Carltonville last week already, and he is now facing charges of premeditated murder. Very little more information available with regards to how she may have died, you know, how the whole thing happened, but there is at least one suspect in custody now, and he is now facing charges of premeditated murder.
Mm. Yeah.
That sounds like there's got to be some kind of mental problem there. I mean, you murder someone, you put them in a plastic bag under their desk. It just seems like really crazy stuff. It's kind of like that guy who murdered that Garawa girl. And it bothered me so much for so many weeks afterwards. I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. It's just, there's some weird messed up people in the world, hey?
Completely.
Jesus.
And I mean, if they have no business living among us,
I don't think these are not people who can be rehabilitated or be made useful or any of that stuff. They just, you've got to throw them away.
They are a hazard to society, you know?
Yeah.
They are a danger to the next person.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, there's another horrible story to file under crazy shit that happens in the country.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. More stories after 7, Gareth.
All right.
All right. Let's get into Ben's sport.
News today brought to you by Kolkakio Pizzeria. It is on a Tuesday. I know the weekend's far, far away, but have a lovely meal. Kolkakio provides them. And nearest neighborhood steer, all you need to do is go onto the website. Is that not right?
Literally gives you the exact, like, measurement or exactly how far it is from you.
New stores opening often, so have a look. Gareth, we do need to get into some sports, and obviously because it's a Tuesday, I have some more conversational pieces for you, which I'm sure you've been waiting for. Okay. So FIFA and controversy. We haven't had a lot of that for some time now, ever since Uncle Sepp kind of got ousted. FIFA's been kind of keeping their slate relatively clean, right? Well, currently it's the Confed Cup is taking place at the moment. Australia sort of frustrated Germany last night, although Germany did win 3-2. But off the field, Gianni Infantino, right? He is the guy that took over from Emperor Sepp. Well, there have been some suggestions that the FIFA Ethics Committee, I know that's like the ANC Ethics Committee, they do exist, they were seem to be investigating some irregular voting on Infantino getting into the role. And then, wouldn't you believe it, they were ousted from office. FIFA doesn't have an ethics committee anymore. These guys were fired. So,
how convenient.
It is rather convenient, wasn't it? So there was apparently a few votes in the African continent that might not have been above board. So the ethics committee was investigating that, and then they kind of went to work the next day and they were sort of fired. So we'll never know. But Infantino, well, he stays in the job, and he'll no doubt just sort of bell Pottinger his way out of this by saying things like, well, there's no evidence, there's no conclusive proof, therefore, let's just keep going and keep doing things. And then next week, we'll all forget about this. It's a very common story.
I'm surprised that FIFA ever even tried to convince us they had an ethics committee. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's the least ethical organization in the world. The Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda, in, you know, with John Coney, are more ethical than them.
From football, we go to, yeah, like I said, the Confed Cup is currently on at the moment. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm a bit footballed out right now. This is this golden time of the year where we don't see these prima donnas falling all over the place, shouting referees and acting like their sport's the greatest thing on earth. Maybe that's not your view, but hey, let's go with that. So
all
right. We've had four games so far. Wednesday will be the next clashes in the Confed Cup. We'll see Russia taking on Portugal and Mexico taking on New Zealand. But into cricket, yesterday was a big day because yesterday was a big day because the SA T20 Global League was sort of formally kicked off. Now, what this is that around the world you get the IPL, Pakistan have got their own Premier League, there's the Big Bash in Australia. And up until now, South Africa have had this sort of Ram Slam kind of league, which was then obviously marred in controversy around match fixing, and it hasn't really been anything that's been internationally recognized. Well, now there's the SAT20 Global League, and 8 teams were announced yesterday. So what they did was, a few months ago, they opened up a tender process to the Cricket South Africa where you could bid for a team. So you apply just like any other process, but ultimately it was down to just a few people who are multi-bajillionaires, and then they had a team. So they are in Durban. There's a guy called Forward Rana. Now, there's only 2 South African-owned teams in this whole thing. So Durban gets that. Benoni, there's a team in Benoni. There's a team in Pretoria, Stellenbosch, although they'll play in Paarl. There's a team in Cape Town, Bloemfontein, Johannesburg, and Port Elizabeth. So the big owners there are Pakistan people and Indian people like Shah Rukh Khan, who owns the Kolkata Knight Riders. So you'll see a team like the Cape Town Knight Riders. And obviously, we'll get more information as this goes along, but Twitter being Twitter, everyone had to have a bit of a moan. Why are foreign people owning these teams? Well,
they can afford them.
There we go.
I mean, what the hell do you want?
Exactly. Now, we need money in this country, right? We just need money everywhere. So that's why people are so excited about potentially getting the Rugby World Cup in 2023. We need international events. So if guys like Shah Rukh Khan want to then bring his Bollywood entourage and sort of make it rain here for 6 weeks once a year, then great, bring it on. Yes, it'd be really great to have 8 SA-owned franchises, but where's the money coming from? Like, just where is the money coming from? Is our insurance going to sponsor them? No. Even if they had the money, people would hate them for doing so. So we've got international teams, international flavor, and this is where sport's going, okay? So this is a very good thing. So before people get really angry about all of this, sport needs to become more global. This is how things work. This is how we get more foreign interest, foreign income, and it helps our players too, because if they're getting good money from the likes of Indian teams and Pakistan teams, then they won't go piss off to England on a Colpack deal where we lose their talents for a minimum of 4 years. So this is a really, really good thing. The Global T20 League. Well done, Cricket South Africa, for kind of championing this cause and getting it into place. So that'll be in November for 6 weeks. Guys like Kevin Peterson will be coming back to play. All the big marquee players for South Africa will be there. And then you'll see guys like Brendan McCullum, probably Chris Gayle, and we'll know more about the big stars as they get announced, sort of the next few weeks. Very, very exciting stuff. British and Irish Lions today sees the Chiefs take on the midweek British and Irish Lions team. This is the final match before the first test. Now, the first test will take place on Saturday. That'll be at Eden Park, which is in Auckland. And Warren Gatlin, of course, does have two teams on this tour. So there's the midweek guys, and then they're basically just cannon fodder. And then there's the test team, which is full of all the players that he really likes. Yeah, and basically in golf, there's a bit of an aftermath as far as Brooks Koepka's maiden major win there. This golf course was longer than ever. It was just an absolute beast. But a guy like Brooks Koepka, who, in quotes, says chicks dig the long ball, he just hits it so far that all the trouble was out of play. And people are saying that, you know, something has to happen now in the pro game. The pros are hitting the ball too far. These courses are becoming obsolete. And even though Erin Hills, which was basically manufactured for a modern US Open, that's great because it was in Wisconsin where there's loads of land. But a lot of golf courses, a lot of great golf courses are becoming obsolete more and more each year because the pros just hit it too far. Koepka was only seventh longest off the tee the whole week, and he was just an absolute beast. I think like the top 50 people were all like over 300 yards off the tee. And it's getting worse and worse. Now, Mr. Gary Player has been saying this for quite some time, of course. But there are two different games. It's great that technology is helping the average hacker like you and I, but for the pros, it's just too easy now. The whole art of shot shaping is gone, and they're just bombing it away from anything that really could concern them. So I think this tournament's going to be a bit of an eye-opener for the golfing world, and how and when the rules change around this and technology, well, it's going to be difficult to say because these massive golf manufacturers, they just own so much of golf.
And, well, somebody has to, right? I mean, they've got to be sponsors to make these things happen, and at least these brands are growing at the same time. I mean, you see some of these clubs. I've seen some of the stuff you have been, and the equipment is expensive. It's state of the art. They've got to advertise. They support the sport. That's how it works.
Brilliant, but the thing is, it's killing the pro game, though. So the thing is, like, these golf courses, in order to host pro tournaments, they now have to require extra land so they can make the holes longer, which means extra watering, which means extra maintenance, which means the pace of play is slower. There's so many negatives around that. So it's great that I can feel like a pro with great equipment, but it's just killing that game.
Yeah,
something that's close to my heart, as you can see. Gareth, we have to get to Henry right now.
You got to get rid of me first. Henry is standing in for Anthea on the finance and the economy this morning, and there's lots to talk about there. But I will join you tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yes, have a fantastic day and a great trip on the Rhine later, and we expect some decent stories tomorrow.
I will let you know all about it.
Very good.
Thank you, guys.
Amanda, are we just going to sort of pad for about 20 seconds where we all act like we – talking amongst each other?
Yeah, sure.
What because, a consummate, you know, professional.
That's what being professional is all about.
Well, see, that's exactly it, you know. And normally this would have happened and you would have gone, wow, I didn't notice that. So here we are, letting you in. So what needs to be happened now is that Anthea has got a very busy week. I'm sure she'll tell us about it in due course, but she can't be here to give us the finance today. So Henry...
Do you think Anthea has a bit of a Justice Malala situation going on?
I don't think she murders people, no.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I didn't say Justice
murders people.
Wow, okay. I think Justice transacts people.
So transacts, you have just accused him of being a murderer on this show.
You know what? In context.
Somebody please make sure that gets back to Justice.
It's all context. You can cut that line out and put it anywhere and say what you want.
Just saying.
I have long believed, and I've made it perfectly clear, I believe that Justice is a bounty hunter, and I think there's no shame in that. It is a time-honored tradition held by many noble people throughout the ages. Uh-huh. And our very own Justice Malala might just be one. A good one.
Transacts people.
Yeah, it's transacting.
There we go.
All right, so since we're going to...
Nothing scandalous.
Since we're going to box people, so then how would you box Rich Mulholland? Because
he's just super smart. I think with Rich, it is what you see is what you get. He's just a super smart, creative guy looking to inspire people. I don't think he's transacting people.
He's also very absent at convenient times.
We should probably really think this up on some of our people.
We should investigate every single one of them.
We absolutely should.
Okay. Well, Henry, you're with us right now.
Morning, Ben. How are you?
Fantastic, Henry. Have you ever done sort of bounty hunting work where you're given tasks and you go and execute that?
In this market, Ben, sometimes we do, you know.
Well, see, there we
do
go.
Do what you have to.
There we go. Maybe you're onto something. All our contributors on the show maybe are slightly more nefarious than we've picked out. So, Henry, interesting talk about the Reserve Bank yesterday. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation around Public Protector's comments, and then the RAND sort of tanked a bit. What's your take on all that?
Yes. So, I mean, firstly, Ben, it was a big move in the rand, right? It's not often that you see the currency move over 2% in one day, and so suddenly as well. In the morning, it moved from about 12 rand 75 to 13 rand to the dollar. And as you've pointed out, it was really on the back of concerns around a sort of curious feature in the public protector's report into the Absa purchase of Bancorp in 1992. And basically what she's come out saying is that they would like to amend the Reserve Bank's constitution mandate, which is governed by the Constitution, essentially so that the Reserve Bank's priority is no longer to protect the value of our currency.
What interest would that be to anyone, really? Because that is what they're meant to do, right?
Well, of course, yes. It's their mandate. And I mean, furthermore, it's just good, sound economic policy. Our sort of read into that is that they'd like the Reserve Bank to be able to print additional money. And what I mean by that is they would just like them to be able to increase the money supply. And what that would do is that would allow the government to effectively spend more money without having to source the funds from investors or lenders. And obviously, you can read into that what you will. But our take is that it will just allow the government to spend more, and that would benefit the patronage network that sits underneath Zuma at this point.
I've never been able to quite work that one out. So you can't just print money, because the money has to have a value somewhere else in the real world, so to speak.
It does, but the value of a currency is really underpinned by the Reserve Bank. So imagine, I suppose this is a poor analogy, but I'm just coming up with it as we talk. I mean, think of the currency as a share in a company. And if you print more shares, each share is worth less. It's the same with rands. If they print more rands, effectively the rands are just worth less.
Right. Okay. That's good enough for me.
Right. So that's fairly negative. And we think that, the ratings agencies will take a dim view of this. We are on negative watch with them at the moment, and they've said that if there is further evidence of meddling with independent institutions, they would take a negative view of that. I don't think they won't change their rating on talk. They'll change their ratings on action.
Yeah.
But this points to intended action, doesn't it?
Well, it does indeed. Especially this is one of the institutions the rating agencies kind of like us for, is it not?
Sorry, say again, but
yeah, and this is one of the institutions that the ratings agencies still take a less than dim view upon.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the Reserve Bank is certainly perceived as being independent, and this is a threat to the Reserve Bank's independence, no doubt. But outside of that, it's been a difficult month for the market. The shareholder weighted index is down around 5% month to date, and it's been a disappointing earnings season, Ben. We're in a technical recession. The economy shrank two quarters in a row now. And as analysts, we're still finding many examples of earnings expectations that are probably too high. And that means that corporate earnings are probably still going to disappoint for some time still. We were looking at the charts yesterday, and I mean, corporate earnings in South Africa in aggregate have kind of gone nowhere for almost 3 years. So we're in a really protracted period of sort of economic stagnation. And it's difficult. It's really difficult to find a reason for that outside of just crappy fiscal, monetary, and economic policy coming out of government.
Right.
Yeah. But looking outside of local markets, I think you guys would have seen 2 days ago, it was in the news, Amazon made an offer for Whole Foods Corporation. The offer was at $42 a share, valuing the firm at $13.7 billion. It's a massive deal, and we think that this is a strategic play by Amazon to expand the Amazon Fresh concept. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it.
Well, no. We're still trying to get over the fact that Whole Foods costs so much money.
Yeah, it's like the Woolworths of America, except it's even more expensive.
Yeah.
But Amazon Fresh have got this really cool concept. And if you go to the offices in the States, you'll see it in the building. It's basically a grocery shop that Amazon employees can walk into, grab a bunch of stuff, and walk straight out. They don't even have to check it at a toll. And the shop's so intelligent that it picks up what they've put in their bag, and it knows exactly who they are, and it just bills them. Right? So it's kind of changing the way you would shop for groceries. And we feel that they're going to expand that sort of concept across the Whole Foods footprint. So it's quite exciting. We're really looking forward to see what they do with it. It does seem as though the financial community are expecting higher competing offers from other food retailers, if for no other reason than just to protect their market from Amazon. But I think those efforts will be fairly futile. I think Amazon will end up buying an asset that they want. But it's pretty good for Whole Foods shareholders, right? They stand to make potentially another 15 to 20% on top of the $42.
Yeah, what a win. There's some kale-loving hippies out there that I'm sure have made absolute billions out of all of this.
Absolutely. And outside of that, you know, the tech stocks have sort of rebounded in the States. So you guys would have seen that there was some concern around valuations over the past week. Your Goldman Sachs came out with a note saying that they were worried that the tech stocks had run too hard. And perhaps they were pricing in too much good news. And they all corrected by between 3 to 5% across the board. But yesterday we saw tech stocks on the S&P 500 up around 1.5% in aggregate. At Anchor Capital, I mean, we still think that these companies can continue to grow their earnings. It's probably healthy for shares that have run so hard over such a short period of time to correct sometimes. And I think that's really what we've seen happening here.
Okay. Very good.
And that's about it for me today, Ben.
All right, Henry, thank you so much for stepping in so ably for Anthea. And,
always a pleasure.
Yeah, that whole Amazon thing, we're gonna keep tabs on that because they might just be taking over the world slowly but surely. And it's cool. I don't mind people becoming huge if they're actually giving us stuff that's going to be really beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, we actually gave a presentation the other day on what we call the Amazon effect and, you know, how it's transforming retail. And certainly as consumers, we're going to benefit. So, you know, you're going to get more convenience for the same price or even a lesser price. And it just makes an industry that hasn't really changed in a while a lot more efficient. So it's disruption, but it's positive disruption.
I know. You mentioned, like, no checkout queues when you go grocery shopping. Deal.
What a pleasure, right?
All that waste and space.
That end of the world is just going to change.
Oh, that's dreadful. All right, Henry, thanks a lot. We'll chat soon.
Okay, guys. Cheers, then.
Okay, so that's the first hour here on the Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com, 6 to 9, Monday to Friday.
What is going on there?
Trying to wrap up the hour. People listen to this like a podcast, and sometimes I think we get a bit too casual. Uh-huh. Like, okay, well, next hour. Anyway, so see what else.
Look at us. We are beefing up this professionalism.
Yeah, you know, it's all about packaging.
Okay.
Well, packaging.
It'll take a note from your
book.
Look,
Amazon might buy us tomorrow. We're going to have something to sell. What else is happening on the show today? See what we're looking at guest-wise.
Well, we're continuing our Father's Day series.
Ah, of course, yes.
Firstly, what an awesome, awesome conversation Gareth had with Craig Wilkinson.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
The Dad Book yesterday, absolutely. I'll get some details because he's actually offering his book, I think, for free or for download. I'll get those details. And
I will have a look here.
It's on Amazon actually as well, right?
Well, he tweeted yesterday. So, like I said, his handle is the_dad_book.
Mm-hmm.
And he tweeted yesterday saying, thanks again for the man-to-man this morning, Gareth Cliff, cliffcentral.com. Grab a free copy of the Dad Book here, and there is a link. So if you go onto his Twitter profile, the_dad_book, that link will be there. Access that, and there we go. You get something for free today.
But that link expires this evening, so you just have today.
Okay.
Exactly. So if you're listening on podcast, adi, askies.
So make haste.
Yes. And so day two of our Father's Day series is with the Mashas, actually.
Right.
Exactly. We know Uncle Mash is part of the entire Cliff Central crew.
Has been from the beginning. Yeah,
we're finding out a bit of, like, more of a backstory about him with his dad in conversation with Gareth.
All right. So before we get into some of my buddy's perhaps potential conception music, there's a message here from Migs for you. Sia, would you rather be executive producer of The Gareth Cliff Show or executive owner of IS Productions?
Oh, Migs, I see what you did there.
What's IS Productions?
Like as in Harpo Productions, Oprah.
Oh.
That's Oprah backwards. Then, with great love, AS doesn't sound exactly hot. Like, AS has connotations of other things, so no thank you, I'm fine here.
Migs, you have a very interesting mind, I must say.
Listen, there's great thoughts to that question, a lot of behind-the-scenes effort, and a lot of research. I see what you did there, Migs.
Well, here's a long message from Graham, which we'll get to now. Graham had some very interesting thoughts about the government yesterday, and here he is saying, I'm struggling to find how celebration of dads who are present and play positive role models in people's lives is racist. Have we devolved that far down the identity politics road so there were not enough black dads in a fucking insurance advert, a ducking insurance advert? Are you people mad? There are no black dads in the ads. Sorry, if you're mad, there are no black dads in the ads. Or is it because society doesn't have enough black dads? Are you mad in reality? How is this white people or even outsurance's problem? Regressive much postmodernists? By the way, I'm white, and my father was sick and barely present during my childhood, and I have zero problem with dads being celebrated, whether they are white or black. Grow the fuck up. Are you blind towards actually hurting black people? Yes, that's right. It's the ANC corrupting the country. Time to take that red pill. Stop being a fucking victim. Graham, a lot going on there, and I see where you're going with it. Another point I would like to throw with that, Graham, is that outsurance, and again, I'm not pro or against outsurance. Yesterday we had Rami's views on it, which I thought were interesting. But if you go onto any stock footage, right? Now, again, I worked in advertising, and I remember we had to have stock imagery quite a lot. And
what does that mean?
Well, get to it. So stock, basically, if you need to buy images and you can't afford to shoot images, you'll then buy. So if it were to be newsreader radio, people might not have the money to shoot you and your massive royalty fees, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll find just some woman by a microphone. You go into any of these stock sites, it's predominantly white people, right?
Mm.
This is how all these sites work.
Mm.
So if you don't have money to shoot an advert and cast all these beautifully representative people throughout the thing, you go to stock imagery and you get clips. So maybe outsurance, again, this is a oversight because they're trying to be a very inclusive brand. Everyone's involved in that. Stock imaging is 95% white people.
Yeah. Mm.
It's a global issue. Mm. So
I mean, that's just the kind of the way that it's been for
eons. I mean, exactly.
In various industries.
This is like advertising semantics now. So, Graham, just further to your point, there's also that element, all of which was maybe overlooked. But then again, in this country, if you do want to make an impact with the population, this is the world we live in, unfortunately.
You got
to consider these things.
Also, you know, Graham's throwing a what's the word? A tirade? He's tirading. That's not constructive at all. Look, I am against outsurance, as I am against all insurance companies, because they all steal our money.
Oh,
no, that is my grudge with outsurance and the whole lot of them. Just taking our money and just fuck all of you.
I think in future, Graham and Mubs should maybe have a podcast together. It'd be some very interesting insights, and it should be outsurance. Sorry,
I don't know how
Insurance Central.
It would be to the ear, but
talk about pleasing to the ear. Here it is, my buddy's first. What she might think was her conception song for her, and after that, we got a whole bunch of news. Palessa's now here, full house in the studio, and it's a Tuesday, and thank you for joining us on a Tuesday.
Yes,
this could have been it. This could have been the start of my buddy's life right here. Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing.
It explains a lot.
Very saucy music video, this.
CliffCentral.com.